You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the bonds shared between people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to Milestone, episode 300 of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week are my co-hosts, Scott Wright and Kevin Johnson, as always. But we are also joined by very special guest, the one and only Jason Street.
Yes.
Welcome, hey. Jason.
Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
You know how to know he's the one and only, right? The Y in his name.
Exactly.
That's how you That's know. Right. So
if it doesn't have difficult. if it doesn't have a Y, it's a Timu knockoff.
and I always leave people wondering why. It's like it worked out perfect.
That is perfect, actually.
That is awesome.
So if you don't know Jason, Jason has actually been one of our frequent guests, actually, going way back to episode 63, which was back in 2017, was the first time that Jason was on the show. But he was also on the show for our 10-year anniversary episode, which was back in 2019. So basically, every couple of years, we invite Jason back for one of our milestone episodes. So welcome back, Jason. Really glad you're on.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah, it is true. I'm only good in small doses. So you got to spread it out. It's like, I understand.
Yes. Well, we're doing that pretty well.
Jason's so expensive, we can't really afford to have him very often. So
There you go.
That's right. So speaking of Jason, there are a lot of stuff been going on, right, since DEF CON and all of that.
Yeah, it was been crazy. The training I did at DEF CON was like amazing. I was very happy about that. Then I was laid off as soon as I left DEF CON, which was not the greatest in time or anything. And then I flew to New York to do a Wired episode, which was hilarious. I wish they would have released it a week before, because a week after they released it, the MGM thing came out. And you could see in the video me talking about, you know, what I do with LinkedIn and how I use it and stuff. So I was like, so close. and then I was literally blessed and just so happy to land a job with Secure Yeti as a chief adversarial officer for them, with Casey and the whole team there, Brett and everybody. It's like they have got some heavy hitters. Steve Fink, Craig Miles, Dark Matter. It's like, you know, Wi-Fi Cactus is good, is there. They've got some really good heavy hitters. They're a really good team. It's like we did a lot of like negotiation at the very beginning, because I told them, I was like, look, it's like, don't hire me just for a name and then not know what to do with me. It's like, make sure you understand. It's like, this is the things that I do. This is what I'm good at. Mm-hmm. And luckily, Casey knows I was a horrible employee to begin with. So there was no
just to throw that.
No expectations.
Exactly. So it worked out. So, and I'm enjoying it. I'm like having so much work doing. It's like I'm doing a talk in a couple of weeks. I've already done a couple other projects. It's like I've got to rob some. I haven't robbed anybody in so long.
So disappointing.
Like, and so I finally got, and I've got the, oh my gosh, I can't say it publicly, but I registered two websites, a .mov and a .zip, and they are as horrible and as malicious as thinking. And I finally get to use them when I'm robbing someone. It's like in a phishing attack, and it's like I get to do a phishing attack coming up. And it's so like chef's kiss, because it's themed over security. Like, so telling people, like, you know, you need to be aware of these kind of things. Go check out this site for more, and that's the malicious link. it's horrible. It's horrible.
Nasty.
Yes.
That's good. Well, hopefully you'll be able to tell that story, you know, after, you know, you can disclose more info about it.
But next time, I would love to.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe it won't be 5 years.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, so do you have anything else coming up that maybe you want to talk about besides your super secret linky thing?
Yeah, I'm just doing a I'm going to be in Boston in a couple of weeks speaking at the Tyler Tech conference, I believe, and then I should be, it's still up in the air because I haven't heard back from them in a while, but I'm still on their website, even though my name's misspelled, because why? in Sydney, Australia, in November, so to the CSO Awards. So really happy for that one because I've never been to Australia before, so that's going to be fun. But this year, I got so burned out from last year. It's like that I was traveling like out of the country at least twice a month almost the whole entire year. And after December, where I was in summer in South Africa in Cape Town for a week and then flew directly to the Netherlands to deal with the winter for a week, I was just like, I'm taking all of January off, and it's like, and then I'm going to only do one country a month for the rest of the year, if at all. And so I've kept it really slow this year. Next year, I'm pretty sure it's going to speed up because I got some new research stuff that I was going to do. I've got this new, I can talk about this attack. It's a really cool attack where I'm talking about common attack tools, not a sophistication, and human intelligence, not artificial intelligence. It's like my talk of my title is something like, you know, the new move over AI, the new hotness is HI. It's like, which is human intelligence. Like, let's start, like, you know, cultivating and developing that instead of trying to develop AI. And so it's this attack is you get a drone. It's like $100, maybe $200, right? It's like small investment to pay to get a micro that has a micro SD card in it. And what I do is around 9:30 to 10 o'clock at night, I fly it into the building so it crashes. It's like by the front door or by the security gate if possible. And what is going to occur?
They're just going like to finding a USB drive.
They're going to investigate it. They're going to go, oh, there's a someone was doing espionage. Someone was doing something. They're going to take it in. They're going to open up the micro SD card. There are two files. One is a Word document that states it's like pilot and FAA registration number. Uh-huh. It's like a document. And we know what happens when they click on that. And then there's a like a DJI.00, you know, EXE.MOV. It's like, and if you click on that, it opens up to rickrolling you, and then you close that window, and it says you've been pwned as a pop-up. And it's like, because it's like either file will, so you make your employees, you weaponize their curiosity, and just they're thinking like, well, it's a drone. Why would it be a something like an attack tool? Why would it be a threat? It's just a drone.
That's brilliant. Like, people are going to pick up a drone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a, sure. It's a honey drone.
Yeah, exactly. Honey drone. I'm not technical. It's like, but I'm very good at devious when it comes to like circumventing humans and compromising them.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to break into Waffle House, Kevin.
There you go. No, because they'll shoot the drone out of the air before it gets to
Two things. One, they won't shoot the drone. They'll throw a chair at it. And two, there's no reason to break into Waffle House. They don't lock the doors.
That's true. That's true. Good point.
You're like, well, carry your own risk.
That's awesome. So Jason's here to kind of be our guest host. And he'll be commenting on the two stories that we're going to talk about. So I'm looking forward to this. So, so Scott, why don't we jump right into our favorite segment, which is Aware Much?
Okay, I have to share. I'm sorry. One of my staff is a loyal listener, and he listens all the time, and he did comment after last week's episode, where I guess you said that it was so quiet when you did the Aware Much segment, because I wasn't there to laugh.
Yeah, you weren't.
And he said, they're right, it was. So, Josh, I listened.
Well done. Yes, thanks, Tom. And it'll be interesting to hear Jason's comments on this section, because this is about a scam. It's a social engineering scam, mostly done by telephone. But it it targets seniors typically. And so I don't know how often Jason targets seniors or is hired to target seniors, but yeah, that'll be interesting to hear. But this is a really kind of more sophisticated version of scams we've heard before. Starts with a tech support scam, gets the victim to install malware on their computer, remote access malware. And then they sort of scout around to see if the person's worth attacking further. And then they phone them as a representative from a bank or financial institution saying, there's been a hacking attempt on your account. Please move your money to a secure account. And if they don't go for that, then they get another call later from the government saying, we really encourage you to move your money into that safe account. And this apparently has resulted in about $50 million worth of complaints to the FBI. So really a very insidious kind of attack. And I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that.
Well, right off the bat, if I may, if they've got $50 million worth of complaints to the FBI, that's the start of the number that it is, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
that most people
don't report it. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. From my experience doing expert witness work for the Florida Attorney General's office on cases like this, the majority of people don't complain. Many people don't know that they got hit. And if they do figure out they got hit, they don't think there's anything they can do. And so they, or they're embarrassed or whatever. And so they don't complain.
Actually, I was wrong. 10 times that, 540 million.
Ah, that's much
worse.
Bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's worse.
It is worse.
I would say, I always tell people there are, one of the key things I tell people, especially when they're talking about like doing things on their machine, it's like, I've always recommended spend $100. It's like, and buy a netbook, a literally cheap, bare bones Chromebook that gets the internet. And I tell people, and I tell this to executives, to school, I tell it to anyone. It's like something I do. It's like, and you put just, you don't put any games, you don't install anything on it. You use the default web browser. You type in the names to your bank, your bill pay, all those different services that you involve with money. And you put that on that machine. And you only use that machine. You don't install email on it. And if you've got if you like mobile payments, because you know a lot of stuff is just social mobiles. I carry a second phone. It's like all my apps and stuff that are banking, they're on that. I don't have text messages. I don't have all these other things on it, but I can do the electronic pay with it, the tap to pay. It's like, and you segment that so that way, even if they get your email or they get your social or they get your other things, they cannot connect to know what your bank is. They can't connect to actually see that you have anything there. And then you just, every month when you need to do bill pays, you open up the machine, yeah. You use it, and you close it, and you put it back in the drawer unless you need it again.
As long as you remember never to do your banking on your regular internet surfing machine.
100%. See, and that's the issue I see with this is, I think that's a great idea if it's possible.
Right.
Not if it's possible. It's always possible. But the bigger issue, I think,
convenience,
especially in this story. No, not even with convenience.
Yeah.
The issue here is with this story, they're calling the person on their phone and convincing
them. Oh,
you said
it got the access first.
No. They researched the person.
Attack vectors.
There was a call initially, like a tech support
scam
call.
Yeah.
To get the remote access.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Oh, on that, I would – yeah, that is hard to – because it's targeting seniors.
Yeah.
It's like that takes people that are like – if they have someone in their life, it's like it takes someone to tell them. It's like say, hey, if you get any kind of call that is asking for anything to do with computers like that, you tell them they have to go through this person. You give them another out, because the problem with most seniors is – they don't have permission to be rude. They don't have permission to be not helpful or polite or kind when someone is calling them. So you need to give them that permission saying, hey, you tell them that you don't have any authorization to do any of that. And that they have to, and you don't give them my number. You tell them that you need to record their information down and they will have someone get in touch with them. So you're still helping them. You're still wanting to work with them.
I like that idea.
But it gives them a it gives them that break and that breather to do that kind of thing. So it's not a technical fix. It is a human fix where it's like you give them permission. And I talk about that a lot when I'm talking about how to empower our employees, is that we don't empower our employees to let the management be the bad guys, because employees, malicious insiders, are not your threat. Helpful employees are your malicious or your insider threat. And it's like, and so you got to give them that permission to be impolite and say, no, I would love to let you in the door, or I would love to answer these calls or help you out, but my manager or my children or my caregiver, they're horrible people. They never let me do anything. They don't give me access to any of this. They're real jerks.
I love that.
I would love to help you, but I can't do it. And let me tell you about, because one time I had, and then just go off on tangents on them, and it's like, and just draw them out. It's like,
just like Kit Boga. Have you ever watched Kit Boga do his scam baiting? Oh man,
scam baiting, and John Hammond does
that. That's what I would do. It's like, I think that would be the best way. It's like, it's just, and it's not technical. Just tell them, like, look, just tell them that you have to refer to you to talk to somebody, and just give them. It gives you a breather.
The simplest explanations or instructions are the best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. So great story. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And there's some good tips there, which are more technical than what we were just talking about. And it's, you know, they're all good tips, but can you get seniors to remember them? Probably not. So keep it simple. So this episode of the security, the Aware Much segment was brought to you by ClickArmor, which is really the most effective way to do remediation for security awareness programs. Our Fakes and Frauds module will actually teach employees through interactive choose-your-own-adventure scenarios, which are gamified. So if you have employees who have been identified as being vulnerable to phishing, social engineering, or other threats, then visit clickarmor.ca and start a live chat to find out the right solution for your organization. That's it for this installment of Aware Much.
All right, last story of the week, and it's about 23andMe. Their data is up for sale after it was scraped through a credential stuffing attack. We talked about credential stuffing before, but this is a big one. This is actually millions of people have had their data exposed. And to make things even worse, there were certain groups of people that looked to be targeted as well out of this this attack. So it brings up the question again of credential stuffing. And of course, the response from 23andMe is like, hey, it's really not our fault. People should choose better passwords. And I personally think that is a poor response for a company that,
here's my issue with that. I agree with you. It can be a poor response. But the question becomes, how much could they have detected? And what I mean by that is, if the attacker logged into millions of accounts from one IP address or 10 IP addresses, that is 100% something 23andMe should have detected.
100%.
100%. But you and I all know how easy it is to spin up a source to hit one account, right? And log in, and then spin up another IP and log in, spin up another IP. That costs almost nothing. So if, and I don't know, but if that is what happened, right? All of these logins happened from multiple IP addresses. How much should 23andMe have been able to detect?
I will say they should have still detected quite a bit. And also, you can't complain about the user's passwords when you're not creating a standard that would be more secure.
I disagree with that.
You can tell them that the length of the password has to be this long, and there has to be a special character, and that there has to be a number, and you can allow spaces. How many freaking websites still don't allow spaces?
But wait a minute, Jason. The issue here isn't that they had weak passwords.
Well, the issue here is, am I not?
No, wait. What they said was
credential stuffing. Yeah,
they took is
they used the password somewhere else.
Right.
It was compromised. Oh, okay.
Breach right? passwords. Okay, yeah.
And 23andMe, yeah. I'm a user of 23andMe. I have an account. Right.
Yeah.
My wife has an account. That's actually relevant to this because my wife is a Ashkenazi. I can't say it.
Ashkenazi.
Right. And her account was not compromised.
All right.
Or at least is not in the records we've seen.
Well, hopefully she's not duplicating. Like that. Yeah. She's right? probably one of the people that are not doing password reuse.
She's not. Like, right? Right. Yeah. And, but here's the thing. Again, I don't know that this is what happened, but if the attacker used multiple IP addresses, and I'm talking like one IP per account, mm-hmm. I disagree that 23andMe should have seen that. Why would is that not any have, different
but just
than
a quick,
me logging in from a different IP?
Quick question for you then, Kevin. Would yeah. it not have been at least some detectable increase in the number of failed logins during a period of time?
If the statement is the person reused their password, there wouldn't have been a failed account.
Not every password reuse is successful, right?
I agree with that. But every time I go to log into my account, I type out my password until I had a password manager. Like but failed, yes, there could have been an increase. But if you, as somebody who has been analyzing logs and dealing with this, if what we saw, and I'm not saying this would have happened, but if what we saw was all of a sudden we had a 100% increase in failed login attempts, but every one of those failed login attempts came from a different IP address, why should we have seen that as an attack? Maybe we should.
An right? anomaly, if not an attack, yeah.
An anomaly, absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
Just like if all of a sudden we saw a million people log in when we tend to see 100,000 people log in.
Yeah. Maybe it was a big commercial for 23andMe.
It's an anomaly. But it doesn't mean it's an attack. And my question is, bluntly, if I was 23andMe, I would force every one of my accounts to have two-factor. I would have forced every
that's
one of my...
That's my point.
Right? Yeah. That's where they should have done that. But that's a... Mm-hmm. proactive thing that has nothing to do with whether the breach is
detection default.
This right. is what happened to Ring, if you remember.
Exactly.
When all those Ring cameras got hacked, it was the same thing. Was they didn't force people to use two-factor authentication. They kept it as an option,
right?
But no one's going to choose that option.
And as a Ring user, God, I'm just announcing everything on this.
Yeah, you are. Wow.
Right. Not only did they not force you to use two-factor, it was difficult for me to figure out how to turn on two-factor when I created the account, right? Wow. Nowadays, it's an immediate, like it's easier. But when I first started it, it was awful trying to set that up. Absolutely is the company's fault. That is absolutely the problem.
I don't like to second guess armchair quarterback. It's like without a lot more information. I mean, like, I don't know exactly what's going on with 23andMe, but I will tell you, I find it very hard to believe that it was that they were being that sophisticated and using multiple IP addresses and doing these things.
I find that hard to believe as well.
And so so I get back to the point that you have to do exfiltration monitoring. It's like Sony lost 1.8 terabytes and didn't notice it leaving their network. That's an issue. It's like, and so absolutely. I think 23andMe should have noticed that kind of exfiltration going on. Because the attack, I don't know that many criminals that are all about patience and being subtle and like going, oh, let's just do it very slow. We don't want them to know that we're getting answered. No, they probably got it as fast as possible before they could get detected. And why that is one of the problems that I see in a lot of the organizations is that they've got so many different rules letting you before you can get into their network. But if you want out, just go. It's like, just out. It's like, we don't care. We ain't looking. It's like, and that's a problem.
Absolutely. I apologize. I need to drop.
Yeah, you can drop.
Call.
No worries.
I want to say, Jason, it's great seeing you again.
Great seeing
Thomas
you again.
Scott, it's always good to see you guys. I hope to see people in IC Squared Security Congress or at OWASP AppSec.
Enjoy the waffles.
Yeah. Oh, Waffle House.
I'll enjoy the waffles
so
with
good.
Kevin. So.
Yeah. Tom and I are doing a Waffle House Wednesday at ISC Squared.
Yep.
Bye, everybody.
All right. And I think that's a good place to end the podcast since Kevin's got to drop. But
Kevin's got to go.
I'm out.
I'm
out. So, Yeah. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Kevin. Great to talk with you again, Jason. And we'll talk to everyone else again next week.
Thanks,
in
everyone.
Episode 301. Thanks, everyone.
Y'all take care.
Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.